I pretty much used up these periods on Wednesday morning talking, and I'm hoping today that we'll have ample opportunity for some comments and some reaction from many of you as we think about this past year. And I would like to divide the time into two sections. One, to give you a little bit of a taste of some of the items that will be coming before the convention as they relate to theological education. Many of you maybe know more about this workbook than I do, because mine just came a couple of days ago, and I see that they were roaming around campus quite a bit before that. But I want to mention some of the overtures that will be coming. I think you're acquainted with those that come from our faculty and Board of Regents, but you may not be aware of some of the things that will be proposed as it pertains to Concordia Seminary. And then in the second half, to talk a little bit about this past year, the goals and to what extent they have been accomplished as far as our life together is concerned. Before starting the overture business, though, I mentioned in the prayer reference to natural disasters. This morning as I was walking over on campus, I met Dr. Klotz, and he made mention of the natural disasters that have taken place. We call them natural disasters, but we know that they are all part of God's permissive will, certainly. And he mentioned how important it is that we also as Christian people see these things in the light of God's economy, and also signs of the last times, the floods and the tornadoes and the earthquakes and the hunger and all of the things that our Lord talks about in Matthew 24 and Luke 21 and other portions of the scripture. Should be reminders to us. And certainly God is talking not only to us, but also to our country and to our world, and calling us again to repentance through these things. And to those of us who have been spared, certainly to thanksgiving for his mercy and his grace. Now to turn to the convention workbook for a moment. There is an overture from our Board of Professional Education Services that's titled "To Restructure, If Necessary, the Synodical System of Colleges." And the overture itself calls for the possibility of consolidation or, if necessary, even closing of some of our institutions. There are those, you know, in the Synod who feel that part of the problem that is ours as far as funding is concerned relates to the question of the number of schools that we have in relationship to those that are being prepared for the professional ministries of the church. At the present time, in order for something like this to happen, whether it would be a consolidation or a closing or any revamping of the system, the decision would have to have the concurrence not only of the Council of Presidents and the Board of Directors of the Synod, but also the Boards of Regents that are involved. The BPS overture asks the Synod to resolve that the BPS, after consultation with respective Boards of Regents and with the concurrence of the Board of Directors and the Council of Presidents, might be authorized and directed to do such things as consolidation, relocation, or closing of certain institutions. Now, the key word in the resolve there is after consultation with the Board of Regents. The Handbook of the Synod, in paragraph 2.233K, calls for the approval by the respective Board of Regents to the closing or consolidation or relocation of any school. And the resolution calls for the putting aside of that bylaw together with another one that talks about all affairs being governed by the Board of Regents, having those bylaws put aside for this triennium only, and thereby authorizing BPS, Council of Presidents, and Board of Directors to make such changes. It's a rather significant resolution, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Synod concurs. Then our Pastoral Colloquy Board has an overture in it that would call for the tightening up or the narrowing of the colloquy procedures. And the proposed overture would remove from the colloquy procedure those who are over 40 years of age and who have had significant experience in church work. Right now, there are three major categories besides those that come from other seminaries and the like. Number one are the teachers, who now must have 10 years of experience instead of five since 1981 to be eligible. Then those who come from certain ethnic groups, special ethnic or linguistic groups. And thirdly, those over 40. The Board for Pastoral Colloquy, which consists of the first vice president of the Synod, Dr. Sauer, and the two seminary presidents in the USA, is memorializing the Synod to take out the over 40. The Fort Wayne faculty is coming in with an overture that would narrow that even more by restricting it only to those who are members of the LCMS and are graduates of recognized theological seminaries and those who come from these special ethnic or linguistic groups. It would cut out the overture from Fort Wayne, not only the over 40, but it would also cut out the teachers from the colloquy program. And I'm sure that this is something that is going to be very heavily debated, because you may recall that at the 81 convention, when the stricture was put in, the 10 years experience rather than five are needed for the teachers, there was considerable dissent, even though that ultimately passed. Still another one from the Concordia College faculty in River Forest would revise the regulation of the colloquy programs for pastors to make them the same as those for teachers, and would in effect put the colloquy program completely under the direction and the control of the respective seminaries, and would in effect kind of abolish the role of the Board for Pastoral Colloquy, which presently involves the first vice president of the Synod. There are several overtures in here that would provide for special procedures for lay ministers to be colloquized similar to what was done with some of the graduates from Seminex for a period of time, enabling them after an interview, perhaps the presentation of some papers, and if needed, some courses in theology to be approved for colloquy. A procedure, particularly from a half a dozen congregations in Nebraska, calls for that kind of procedure for lay ministers. A very far-reaching overture from the faculty at Fort Wayne would revise the vicarage program. At present, our handbook specifies that a year of supervised field work is required for all theological students before graduation, and states that ordinarily this experience is to be granted in the second year before graduation, as is the normal custom. Ordinarily then takes care of those who are a little older perhaps and get a deferred vicarage or a so-called convertible vicarage after graduation. However, the overture from the Fort Wayne Seminary mentioning the problems involved with financial costs for families and the like suggests that eliminating one family move for the seminary student would be desirable, and would take out that provision that calls for the vicarage program prior to the final year on campus. My own personal opinion is that this kind of view of the vicarage is one that is entirely different from the way in which we view the vicarage program as part of the academic training, and would have certainly far-reaching implications in terms of supervision and the like on the part of the seminaries. I guess I'm saying that personally, I don't know how the faculty will have an opportunity to talk about it next week. Personally, do not favor that kind of change. We have an overture in that is not of great import, perhaps, but it asks the Synod to clarify the provisions for modified service and retirement of faculty members simply trying to clean up or clarify the bylaw that has to do with those who take early retirement. Retirement has been moved from 65 to 70, and whether or not these would be considered continue on the clergy roster, whether provisions could be made for them on other than a call basis and the like between the time of their retirement and the age of 70. The Board of Regents of the Austin School asked the Synod to consider an alternative to tenure, that instead of having tenured professors, we would have what would be called a rollover procedure, so that if a person were appointed for a four-year term, that at the end of the first year, another year would be tacked on. So it would roll over, and in place of tenure, there would be these four-year appointments, which after the end of the first year would then have another 4 years. After the second year, another year would be added on, so that it would be made 4 years and the like. That's been discussed by the presidents of the various institutions, as has the whole question of tenure been questioned, as you know, not only in our schools, but in the public domain as well. The Board of Regents of Fort Wayne asks that the Synod would approve and fund one new professor each year during the next triennium at each of the two seminaries in the United States to work in the area of continuing education. The idea being that they would be very active out in the field, trying to bring continuing education programs to the pastors in the field. So in reality, asking for six professors in the next 3 years, three here and three at Fort Wayne, whose primary responsibility would be continuing education. And then a final one in this section deals with the transfer of higher education responsibilities for the Canadian seminaries, including the one projected for Saskatoon, to the Lutheran Church Canada, which is that organizational group of our districts up there. And that comes from the BPS and is occasioned primarily by legal requirements and legal problems of having a Canadian school under the supervision of a United States board. It would safeguard some kind of continuity and unanimity by resolving that the BPS would be continually in consultation with the Lutheran Church Canada to implement and to direct the policies, develop them, procedures and so forth for the schools. Then I think we have already mentioned, and that if you're interested in the actual workbook, the overtures that deal with the merged boards and the ones that call for a separate pastoral board for seminary education are not found in Section 6 under higher education, but they're found under the constitutional and structural section of the handbook. Both Fort Wayne and the Indiana District and Concordia Seminary St. Louis have asked for a separate board that would deal simply with those matters pertaining to the seminaries in view of the rather unique and narrowed focus that we have in training only those for the office of the pastoral ministry, the difficulties that BPS has in trying to administer and develop and implement policies for all the colleges and seminaries. The BPS, on the other hand, has an overture in that would do something else, not to have a separate board, but rather to merge the two boards of regents and have one board of regents that would serve both Fort Wayne and St. Louis, one, again, that I suspect neither the Fort Wayne board nor the St. Louis board would look on with too much favor. Then we have the ones already referred to previously in these meetings, both by Fort Wayne to asking the Synod to give them permission to go out and raise funds for a library building. They've already done a feasibility study. And one from our seminary that asks our permission to go Synod-wide to seek funds for married student housing, building up our endowment funds, taking care of ongoing needs, and also for the erection of a chapel on campus. Those are probably the primary ones, and before looking at the second section, you may have some questions or comments that you'd like to make on that. I think it would be better to do that now rather than to wait till after the second half of the presentation. So if you have some comments or you'd like to ask some questions about these, this would be a good time to do it. Yes.
In opposition to any resolution for joint fundraising, there seem to be a number of resolutions coming out of Iowa asking for moratoriums on any special synodical fundraising. How strong is that movement? I understand that some of our own fundraising people have run into some problems because of a saturation of special appeals in certain fields of the church.
I don't know if all of you heard it, but the question has to do with special appeals in the church and a saturation of people out asking for money, and the fact that there are overtures, especially from Iowa, calling for a moratorium on special offerings. I haven't read through that section yet, but in looking for a couple of these overtures, I had to go through the index, and I noticed that there were several with that title. I haven't even read them. But my own reading is, from contacts with district presidents, that you are correct. There is a growing resistance to special fundraising appeals. And part of the trap, I'm now expressing personal opinion, that we can fall into with a successful thing like a Forward in Remembrance that God mightily blessed, is to believe that because we pushed the right button and got $75 million once, that all we have to do is crank up the machinery and call out the troops and get the organization, and then we're going to get $90 million the next time. To do that is, it seems to me, to be going in the face of what is good stewardship practice. And what is more desperately needed in our church is a return to a sound, Bible-based, Christ-motivated principles of stewardship on an ongoing basis that will provide the funds for our church body. And I think that what happened up until recent times was the result of that thorough training and indoctrination and the good activity of the Spirit of God in leading our people to support the program of the district and the synod. And if we now turn into fundraisers rather than real biblical stewardship people, we may, for the short run, pick up the bucks. But then we're only reaching the pocketbooks, and we're not reaching the hearts, and we're not going to reach the pocketbooks very long. It's just like advertising something commercially. You can milk something for a little while. If you spend millions and millions of dollars in advertising a product on TV, you can stop the advertising, and for a little while after that, that product will continue to sell. But then all of a sudden, it will plummet into nothing. I'm not saying that anybody has this idea, though I know there is concern in the Synod that we seem to feel that that we can simply raise dollars rather than raising people, or that we can raise people by simply raising dollars. And the reverse is true. As people are raised and their hearts are warmed to the work that's being done in foreign fields and what's being done at places like Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, and in the many other mission projects of the church, there also the funds will come. Long answer to a simple question, but yes, Paul.
This is in regard to the Fort Wayne resolution about the research program. My initial reaction was that it seemed to show a faculty concern for the students and the situation they're in, as well as the willingness to make changes to meet new situations that the students find themselves in. My question has two parts. Would the resolution necessarily preclude supervision of that vigorous situation or to come at the end of the academic
Well, it, I'm sure, would not preclude supervision, but you can understand that if one has fulfilled his academic requirements prior to that, to do this on a long-distance basis and try at that time, where sometimes some very severe problems or some strong deficiencies show up that can be rectified or helped, and some maturation take place in the final year, that kind of thing becomes an impossibility in this. Now, no question that there is here a concern for, you know, the students, which we share just as much here at St. Louis. It's a question of the wisdom and how much, quote, supervision and how much would be able to be done long distance when one has finished his academic training in terms of holding up those who needed to be held up, how practical that is, and how that plays into the whole educational process is the thing that I question. You had a second question, Paul.
Yeah, well, would there be some poll or a survey taken of student thought on this matter?
Well, I don't know. I think that anyone who has... not to my knowledge. I would doubt that, and I don't know whether Fort Wayne has done it either. But certainly, you know, the floor committees are always open to hearing from anybody in the church, whether that's faculty, student, or pastors out there, or district presidents, or whatever, as far as feelings are concerned. So you or anyone else who has feelings pro or con on that could certainly... talk to the, or write, get in touch with the committee chairman, who will be Dr. Arnie Kuntz, president of the Southern California District. Yeah, Billy?
I had a question like that. From any of the issues in the handbook, is that the usual procedure if you wish to express an opinion to write a report?
Yes, and having served as chairman many times in these committees, those responses are very carefully looked at. The chairman of the committee will always see to it that all members of the committee receive a copy or at least have the opportunity to review any correspondence that comes. The appearances before floor committees are pretty much restricted, especially in higher education, because with the 16 schools around there, if every president gets half an hour, that alone takes up 8 hours of their time, and they're meeting just a few days and have to not only assimilate all of the presentations, but then come up with hard and fast resolutions for the convention. So it's not quite as easy to get a personal appearance before a committee, though they usually have considerable amount of time designated for people who would like to come in to talk about different overtures. It's usually people who have themselves made it or who are very much opposed to it. But you are very welcome to express yourself in writing to the committee and let them know your feelings. And as I said, those responses are not just shoved in a corner, but the members of the committee have a chance to really look at them. Yes, you want to continue?
So what you would do is write to the president of that floor committee, and if you did write to him, should that be at least a month or 2 months before?
Well, it would be important that you would write very soon to the committee, because on the 28th of May, which is just a few weeks away, I think you all know how many days away the 27th is, it's one day more, the floor committees will be meeting here in St. Louis. So in fact, I think it starts on the 27th, on Friday night, while we're having graduation. They'll be organizing. And they'll be meeting over the Memorial Day weekend, and by Tuesday, they will have had to have their resolutions completed. I think you know the process, do you? That the floor committees meet these 5 days or so here in St. Louis, and it's been arranged so that they'll have the meeting in conjunction with the dedication of the International Center, which will be on the 29th. 29th? And then on the Tuesday following, when they complete their work, this is all immediately put together in the form of the first edition of today's business, so that the church, hopefully somewhere around the middle of June, has a copy of all of the proposed resolutions of the floor committees based on the overtures that have been presented in the workbook. Then following that, again, you have the opportunity, having seen what the floor committee has done, to to respond, because they will be meeting again then, depending on their workload, a day or so before the convention to review and see if they want to shift, whether they want to amend, whether they want to do 180 degrees and say no to something they had previously said yes to, or whatever. So the resolutions that are adopted by the floor committees at the end of May may or may not be the resolution that is ultimately presented to the Synod in convention. So you have two shots at the committee. One now on the basis of the overtures, and one later on the basis of the resolutions that they tentatively adopt on the basis of the overtures. Yes?
How acute is the need to consolidate or close these fanatical colleges that are being considered? And has any study been done as to how this might affect the number of students who participate in the system training?
Okay, yes, about this question of consolidation and closing and what kind of studies have been made. The BPES has been making continual studies with reference to the number of professional ministry students in relationship to the total enrollment, the cost per student, and also the cost per professional ministry student, the proximity of one school to another, the varying programs that are conducted, whether the programs that are not related directly to ministry in the church are pluses or minuses as far as fiscal things are concerned. And I don't think it's any such secret knowledge that they've come very, very close to, trying at least to close one or more of our schools in fairly recent times. And two or three of them have been under serious consideration. So those schools, of course, that have a low percentage of students who are studying for some church vocation argue that the nurses program and the, whatever it might be that they're engaged in that isn't directly related to church is not a minus, but it is rather a plus, because it brings in additional revenue and they, quote, make money, thereby helping to subsidize the program of professional ministries. Now, others argue the other way and say, well, that's only because you want to keep the school open. But if we close the school, and today, unlike the situation in the turn of the century and the like, and with air travel and all the things that are available, there's no need for us to have schools 150 and 200 miles apart. That's part of the argument as far as Canada is concerned, as to whether or not there should be one central one in Canada, or whether that 1,000 miles of wilderness between West and East Canada is a barrier that makes it important that there be one in Ontario and then another one in the Western state. I hope I didn't offend any Canadians, but that's what Al Stanfill always calls it. Whatever that is in the middle there. that's worse, isn't it? Yes.
How can students who are not so fortunate as to receive copies of the workbook free get a hold of them?
I don't know. I assume we have something in the library. I guess the only thing is to try to borrow one from your pastor and your resident field education, or from somebody on the faculties. Don't steal any. I got my name in mine. Two or three places, in fact. These things, and I'm not telling you what page numbers are. Okay, that's good. I didn't realize that. That's why I saw so many of them around before I got mine. All the fourth-year students have them, Scott says. So, other comments? If not, let me turn to the second section of today's agenda. And again, I hope I'm going to do less of the talking and that you'll have some response and comments. But I should like to talk a little bit about this first year with you. so many people, and whenever you begin to list groups or individuals, why, you always run the risk of forgetting somebody that's very important. But to Scott and to all the members of the Executive Committee, the Student Senate, and to all of you for your very, very gracious reception of Mrs. Barth and myself, and the kind cooperative way in which you have worked, it has truly warmed our hearts. The other night when we were talking about this, and we said, boy, we already miss some of these fellows just thinking about their leaving. What's it going to be like in 4 years when we have had the chance to have an association that lasts longer? So we're very much touched by your love and your kindness and are grateful for it. I must say the same with reference to the faculty, and particularly also to Dr. Klotz, who was so kind and has been, continues to be, during the time when we were getting organized, and has really been a good and a loyal friend, and I thank God for him and for all the others as well. To our board, I don't know, the student body, I guess, thinks of the board as some nebulous, at least part human, group of people who pass a lot of resolutions, but I've been so impressed during this year. You know, you get all kinds of horror stories about everybody before you arrive on the scene, whether it's students, faculty, or whatever. But the board has been just a wonderful group to work with, and I thank God for that as well. This year, there is only one member of the board who cannot be reelected. There are several up for, there are three, I think, up for reelection. But Walter Disson, who's an attorney living here in St. Louis, is ineligible for re-election. So we have two men proposed, one from the Northwest District and one local person for that position. But all of them, without exception, have been just great people to work with. As has the St. Louis community, the pastors who came out so beautifully for the luncheons that we had up here in Pritzlaff during the year. I think I reported we had about 120 pastors, which only proves again that you can get them out if you give them a free lunch. But they really were. Those were very, very nice meetings. The lay leadership group that is going to be meeting again tomorrow night at the field house, that have really were the great people of the St. Louis community during the days of all the turmoil around here, and expressed such a loyalty, both fiscally and in many other ways. So just everybody has been great, and I want to make sure to express that personal appreciation on behalf of both Mrs. Barth and myself for the year. We naturally had some goals in coming. I may have mentioned some of them to you at our talks before even I arrived on the scene, and certainly since that time they had to do with faculty, they had to do with students, they had to do with fiscal matters, they had to do with administrative matters. As far as the faculty is concerned, I believe that we're right on target. When I came on campus, Dr. Schmiel said, boy, it would be great if by the end of this school year, the start of the 83-84 school year, we would be able to have three or four new faculty on board. And I'm very, very confident that this is going to be the case. One has already, as you know, accepted our call, Dr. Nagel. I talked to him yesterday, and he's got a lot of plans coming up for the summer. He's going to be on tour. He's going to be over in Cambridge with the 25th anniversary of his congregation there. He'll be teaching here in summer school, and he and his dear Betsy will be arriving on campus around the 15th of August. But we have, as you know, three names that have been cleared by the BPES, and three positions that have been cleared, and these men will be brought before the electors on the 20th of May. I'm confident, hopeful, that the electors will approve having the board issue a call, and we know that all of these men are very anxious and willing to be part of our St. Louis seminary community. So if God is gracious and good, I really believe that we will have four that will be on board by the start of our next academic year. If so, we, as I say, will be right on target, and we thank God for that. I'll talk a little bit more about it later on. Let me back up just a little bit to say something about personal goals. I guess one of the things that I wanted, of course, to accomplish was to get to know a little bit about the task at hand here. I don't know where I put that on a 1 to 10 scale, but it has been a good year. People often ask, what about the differences of being in a district president and being here at the school? And I usually answer by saying that yes and no to the question of whether it's very much different. Of course it is different to be on a seminary campus and to be involved with students and faculty and staff and in the academic process, far different than it is in dealing with the 300 pastors who are out there. And yet in many ways it is also similar, because you are still dealing with people, you're dealing with structures, you're dealing with administrative things, so it really isn't as different in some respects as one might expect it to be. One of the reporters who interviewed me shortly after I came here said, as I related my background in the parish and then in the district, it seems, he said, the farther you advance in the church, the farther you get away from where the action is. And, of course, I first question whether it's an advance, because one always has to remember that the highest office in the church is still to be a parish pastor. I hope that all of you are here today never forget that and that you really believe it. When you move to a district office, you have very close contact with congregations, but it's, of course, not the same as being their shepherd. You deal with pastors, you deal with the people and the problems of the parish. Then coming here, it seems that you are a step still farther removed in many respects. While people in the church are needed for these tasks, somebody has to be a district president, somebody has to be a professor of homiletics or exegesis, and somebody has to be a seminary president, nonetheless, where it happens is out there where you people are going. And whatever we can do to help that process and to help equip and train you as God gives his blessing for that work, we thank God. But ultimately, it's out there in what you are going to do that we will see whether or not the church really prospers and fulfills its commission and experiences the blessing that God would like to bestow upon us. It's been a year of spiritual growth for me, and part of that has been these new associations with students and faculty that have truly warmed us and made us feel very, very good in growth in many areas, and I hope it's been that for all of you, especially also growth in grace and the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. As far as the student body is concerned, I had some goals with respect to the personal ministry to students. I'd like to say that I believe something is on the way there. Not long after I came into office, one of the students came in and said, one of the things that I think might be lacking is more one-on-one ministry to the students by the people of the faculty and the administration. When I was in Central Illinois last week, one of the pastors got up and he said, I used to be in the business world and I visited many seminaries. Anglican seminaries, Catholic seminaries, Baptist seminaries, Lutheran seminaries, and he said there was only one thing that was a common complaint, and that was that there was not enough being done for the students in terms of their spiritual development. What are you doing at Concordia Seminary with respect to that, was his question. I think that this whole interview questionnaire that we sent out to all the graduates of the last 5 years is simply part of a much larger package. We asked the graduates what they think about the theological interview, and I can tell you that it's overwhelmingly, and these fellas had no way to, confer with one another, overwhelmingly in favor of a continuation of the theological interview, almost, you might say, unanimous. And the response, by way of percentage, Professor Picorni would know it, I don't recall it, but that in itself was astounding. And the length of the reply, sometimes a couple of pages, single spaced, with suggestions. It was very gratifying. And not simply saying it's great, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, but some helpful criticisms and suggestions as to how it might be improved. But the point I'm trying to make is that this questionnaire that we handed out is really part of a much larger package that involves what are we doing, not simply to interview students before they are certified and endorsed for ministry, but from the day that they get on campus. And the very first assignment that will be given to our new Dean of Student Life will be to really try to refine and develop more fully and implement, which is probably the most important verb, implement this kind of thing by way of ministry to students. If this happens, maybe more will happen also by way of personal ministry by students. We have a kind of a diverse campus. We've talked about that many times. Some of you live in dormitories. Some of you are married and live off campus. You have family responsibilities. Some of you are colloquy students. You come from so many different backgrounds. Some of you are considerably older, others much younger than the average and the like. And I think that part of what can be better as far as your ministry to one another hangs on the ministry that we are able to give to you. The two are related, and as one improves, whether yours to one another or ours to you, the other one will also get better. Goals with reference to chapel. I guess I feel a little sad when, if I do look out the office window and see a lot of people walking south instead of north at 25 after 9 in the morning. Chapel attendance isn't really what it ought to be. Maybe we all, you know, have to sit down and think this over again, not simply as far as the vertical relationship is concerned and what we receive from God through His Spirit in Word and Sacrament, but also what we are able to do by way of warming one another. You know, the old story about the pastor just occurs to me when this man whom he was visiting said that he didn't have to come to God's house. He could read his Bible at home and he could study and pray at home as well. And it happened to be a home in which there was a fireplace. And the pastor went over and there was a little bed of coals there, and he took one of the coals and moved it off by itself. And the man got the picture that coals are also warmed by other coals, and as they sit alone, it is far easier for them to go out. Seems to me that we have to review that in our minds individually, the relationship of the sacrament on campus, its frequency, and what this has to say. In what sense are we a worshiping community? I confess to some apprehension in that area. But that's the whole idea of our devotional life together, one we need to think through some more. Preparing to meet and relate to people. We're kind of, in a sense, a cloistered life here. We each have a task to do. We come on campus, I'm sure some of us, with the idea, I have to get through. I have to get through. And there's nothing wrong with that. And now I have to adjust to new social relationships, to a new community, to a new curriculum. I've got a family, perhaps. I've got some fiscal problems that have to be taken care of. I have recreational and other needs that have to be I. And while certainly our own salvation is number one priority, and God doesn't want us to, you know, neglect our own needs, and we do need to get through, what can happen is that we get this cloistered outlook toward life also as far as relationship with people are concerned. I said to the Spectrum the other day in a little interview that one of the things that we can do also for our spiritual development is to get out and meet people. and not just people on the seminary campus, but also as far as our resident field education program is concerned, so that we don't get so boxed in and so much navel-gazing that we don't think about other people and how to relate to them, so that living in this world of books and academia and all the rest, we now go out all of a sudden and we just about feel awkward in the real world, if you understand what I'm trying to say. And all of the things that we've talked about, from personal relationships with fellow students to our dress, to our appearance, all of those things play in to this relationships, because it is so important in the pastoral ministry that we can sympathize, empathize, see people where they are, and I'll say a little bit more about that in just a bit. We had some goals with respect to fiscal matters and raising the budget, as it were. I hope the 1983 convention is going to talk to that. We've, during this year, initiated, as you know, some new budget-setting procedures. I think it's a little clumsy this year, but we're making a start that will get more people involved in building the budget. It will involve some cost-saving procedures, I am sure, and it will also enable us to have better control during the year in terms of expenditures that should be helpful for our church and for our seminary. Administratively, I promise not to tinker with any of the machinery until we see once how she limps along during one year. Thank you. There are some shifts coming shortly. Administratively, I don't think that any of them are cataclysmic, but they will be in a couple areas of some substance. They may not touch the student body directly, but we hope and pray that they will be helpful ones. Now, things to be done, and then I'll let you talk. In all the areas above, we still have some very gaping holes in the faculty. We want a good homiletician to be added to the staff, to those that we already have. Fort Wayne is bartering for has just put on someone who's only to work in the area of missions, and that maybe will have some funding from, even though we're blessed again, not only with Dr. G, but others who are very much a part of the mission scene and the special ministry scene. As far as students are concerned, one of the things I believe we have to remember always as faculty here is that we are not recruiting students for Concordia Seminary St. Louis, that we are recruiting students for the ministry. And there's always a tendency, I think, to say we want to get a lot of bodies. You know, enrollment's gone up and we've been very much blessed, and so everybody we can get on this campus, great. Well, we do. We need men. And I hope and pray we're going to continue to need large enrollments. But it's above all for the ministry that we're recruiting, not for this place, vis-a-vis Fort Wayne or Saskatoon or any other place around the world, but people for the ministry. And as we do that, we will seek out those who have not only the needed talents, but also the amount of consecration and dedication that are needed. We need to work more closely with students even than we have, and to help under God to give them a real appreciation and a love for the ministry. That is crucial, that you leave this place by the grace of God really loving not only ministry, because as Christians we all want to serve, but to love this marvelous office of the ministry that brings us satisfaction that we can gain nowhere else in the world, and which involves the greatest task in the world, proclaiming God's gospel message of his mercy and grace in our Savior Jesus Christ. Now, the overarching concern is the product. Said every mission sermon I preach, I talk about the three things we want from our products: academics, orthodoxy, pastoral people. So I'm not going to belabor you with that. But that can be accomplished only as we have a sensitivity to and appreciation for all who are part of this. There needs to be much more integration and cohesion. That involves student to student, as I mentioned before, because of your diverse backgrounds. It means faculty to student and vice versa. It means faculty to faculty. It means faculty to staff and vice versa. It means the seminary to the synod. If there's one thing that I still see is a lot of we, they kind of talk and attitude. We, the students, and they, the faculty. We, the faculty, and they, the administrators. We, the seminary, and they, the synod. And part of this is, an appreciation for the fact that none of us can live without the other. Now, I don't know what I'd do if Bea Hollifield didn't come in every morning and do the beautiful job she does in the boardroom and in my office and making that hospitable and clean. And who of us could live without John Drews if those boilers weren't working and whatever down there? Sometimes we tend to forget this. You students do, and the faculty, too. And, you know, we need the classroom, and we need the administrators, and we need the people who keep things humming. We all need one another. It's appreciation for one another. And we all have a role to play here. And if we simply want to stick our neck and say, don't bother me, I got this to do, I got administrative decisions to make, I got Hebrew vocables to study, I got a book to write, or whatever. Then it doesn't go like it should. And hand in hand with that we accept people where they are. You're going to have to do that out there. And you soon find out that there isn't everybody in the whole congregation that's going to volunteer for the evangelism committee. And they aren't all going to tithe. And they aren't all going to show up for Bible class on Sunday morning. They all aren't going to be there for Lord's Supper. They all aren't going to go 12 times a year or 25 times a year to communion. Well, we have to learn that here, too. That doesn't mean that we condone sin. It doesn't mean that we don't care whether people mature or whether they're crude or whatever. But it simply means that all of us, and I start with myself, need much more maybe than we have to accept people where they are and to say we thank God for all the different types of people that we have on campus. I mentioned to the wives last week in the last section, and I guess it was a very poor word to use, but you know, this, like any other community, is kind of a menagerie. You got every kind of person here by way of student and faculty. And I guess if we had only one type, whether it was one type of student or one type of faculty, we'd all go bananas in 2 weeks. And yet we need each one of the emphasis that these people bring and that you bring in your rich and varied ministry. I've seen it so often in congregations. You get two pastors, one follows the other. They're different as day and night. But one came this year and one came 8 years later, and God wanted just that type of personality at that time, at that place, for that situation. So I guess I'm not griping, I'm not frustrated, because I think we're coming, but my plea is that you know, all of us together learn a little more of an appreciation so that we don't think, oh, the faculty, they're a bunch of insensitive people, they don't care about the student, they're just interested in seeing to it that they pump us with a lot of knowledge. And that the faculty, you know, can not say, oh, those students, you know, they are only looking out for number one. They don't care about anything but getting out of here. And all of this thing that goes across, the whole we, they thing. But to see this as we see the body of Christ. The hands, and how can the mouth say to the eyes, you know, I have no need of you. But that we all work with one another. And that always takes place in the context of law and gospel. It means a lot of forgiveness asked for and a lot of forgiveness granted as we live at the cross and can also extend the Savior's forgiveness, which we've experienced joyfully day by day, also to others, and help one another and encourage one another, build one another for the common task we have. So thank you for what has been a real, real nice year, and for which I thank God. And we hope and pray that next year is going to be even better yet. Now maybe you have some questions. I know Scott and some have to leave for a meeting, but way in the back, yes, please.
Yes, Dr. Smale has initiated a thorough review of our educational objectives, curriculum, and course content. What is the status of that?
I'm sorry that I didn't hear the first part of that.
Dr. Smale has initiated a thorough review of our educational objectives, curriculum, and course content. What is the status of that? review of our educational objectives, curriculum, and course content. Is that still sufficient?
Well, it was initiated, yes. And just yesterday, we had a faculty forum with respect to goals and needs that was a continuation of a process that we went through at the faculty retreat last year. Very shortly, it is my hope to extend and to continue this so that we have an ongoing program. I wanted to add that when I came to administration, I knew there was something else I wanted to say, and I didn't have it down here in front of me, and I'm very happy that you asked, because Dr. Albrandt, who was our facilitator, mentioned yesterday, and I know it from my own experience, that you can either work with crisis type of decision making, or you can work with, objectives. And decisions are going to be made. They're either going to be made in a crisis, as you need faculty or you need students, or you got to have courses and you have to have syllabi and stuff, or it can be done in a way by which you set certain objectives. It's my intention during the coming year that a committee would be formed that would be ongoing, not of, quote, administrators, but of faculty in consultation with the administration of the seminary, that would not simply look at curriculum, not simply look at finances, but would certainly be involved in every aspect of our life together, so that we can be looking down the road and saying, these are our needs, and these are the goals, and this is how we, under God, can accomplish them.
Could there be student representation on such a committee?
Pardon?
Could there be student representation on such a committee?
Certainly. Yeah, we haven't talked at all yet about the number on the committee or the format or who would be involved, but I know one thing, that, as I said, it's not going to be the, quote, executive committee, that, you know, that it's going to have involvement other than those. Thank you. Yes?
This is way off the track if you're throwing this open. Would you have any comments of a pastoral nature in regard to what the bishops agreed to yesterday?
Oh, I'm happy to comment. I'm not sure that the importance is so much on what they said as on what they presume. My concern in these pronouncements is, and I believe Dr. Nerger was touching on that, I didn't hear all of his presentation last week, is that we distinguish between talking to the moral issues involved and to spelling out the solutions. Now, when bishops or pastors or anybody else have complicated solutions to problems that involve not only political considerations, but intelligence reports and all the other things that go into the questions of nuclear warfare, then I don't give that any more credibility than if some chemical engineer wanted to lecture me on the Gainus Myostaticum. There is a moral issue involved, and certainly who among us, you know, wants war? Who wants nuclear holocaust? Who should not call upon the nations of the world to live in peace, and to our president to do everything to pursue that? But I am always a little nervous when, on the basis of the fragment, why should, in terms of a political solution or a military solution, why should a person listen to a bishop any more than they would listen to Grandma Schultz? What do they know about those facets that go into that solution? So that's my thesis, I guess, is not so much what they say, but what they presume. And I don't want to be completely critical, because God knows there is a prophetic role to the church, and it's always that fine line between